This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't a part of my judgment, my own sweet time didn't teach what I found. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the show, of my podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I, Shane Told, your host, speak to other lead singers about what it's like to be the frontman or frontwoman of a band. Yeah, welcome. How's everybody doing today? I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful. I had a bit of a messy weekend in Las Vegas with my best friends for a bachelor party, and I gotta be honest, man, for my age, I haven't done a lot of bachelor parties. I think that's because most of my friends haven't gotten married. But congratulations to Aaron, my buddy, for taking the plunge. And we had a blast. And the reason this podcast is a day late is because I got home on Monday and I just couldn't even think about doing anything. So sorry for the delay on getting this episode out. I gotta say, though, this is a great one, worth the wait of a day or so. We have Corey Lockwood of Sufferer, formerly of A Lot Like Birds, on the show. And just a few weeks ago, we had a great episode with Kurt Travis, a very honest discussion with Kurt about A Lot Like Birds, among his other projects. And I thought it made sense to hit up Corey and be like, hey, let's talk, man. Because A Lot Like Birds is a band that I think has such a great core group of fans, and a lot of people are asking what happened, and a lot of people are sad the band's gone because they made some incredible music. So we talk about that. We also talk about Sufferer's new band, which is a very different approach to a band, to music. It isn't just a bunch of guys getting in a room, you know, making some sounds and figuring it out later. This band has an approach. It's all about the discussion of depression, of anxiety that lives within so many of us. And the band members have all struggled with their own issues. This band is making a statement about this through their music. And as I say to Corey, just some great tunes as well, man. Awesome, awesome band. So that's going on. Corey has a book he's writing right now. We talk about all this and more. Sit back, enjoy. I have another fine episode for y'all. I want to welcome everybody who signed up for the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club in the last few weeks. There are so many of you. It is wild. Thank you. Thank you for joining. Thank you for the support. If you're interested in joining this thing, check it out. LeadSingerSyndrome.com/All Access. For as little as $6 a month, it gets you in. It helps me out. It keeps the lights on around here. And of course, there's perks like bonus episodes. But the biggest thing, I think, is joining this community. We have an amazing community now of 300 plus strong. We talk about music. We talk about sports. We talk about films. We talk about just about everything. And it really is a great group, and I love y'all. And yeah, check it out. You can get stuff sent to your houses, all kinds of perks, Lead Singer Syndrome merchandise. It is a good time. Again, the link, LeadSingerSyndrome.com/All Access. Yes, welcome all of my sinners. Now, I know music and sports don't always go together. There's the cliche, you know, punks versus the jocks kind of thing that goes on. But I'm a huge sports fan, and this is my favorite time of year for sports. Hey, man, the Blue Jays, I gotta say, Yankees are hurt. Red Sox aren't winning. You never know. Maybe they'll sneak in there with some young guys. I want to hear your take on who you think is going to win the World Series this year, the NHL Stanley Cup, the NBA Championship. Is it all Toronto? It might all be Toronto this year. If you're mad at me, send me an email. Get in touch. I'd love to hear your take on some sports and, you know, any feedback you might have. You can always hit me up, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. And, of course, hit me up on social media, all that stuff, too. And we've got the hate line option. 657-666-HATE. Give me a call. Leave me a message of hate. I just love that so much. Anyways, hey, thank you for your support with the show. Here's the episode and my conversation with Corey Lockwood of Sufferer.
At Skype, apparently.
I don't use Skype that much, to be honest. And every time, I feel like every time I open the app, it's like I have to update it or something's changed. I'm like, how do I just make a call? Isn't that the whole point of it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, dude, I'm glad we could connect, man. Thanks for doing this. And lots to talk about, but I guess let's just start with, how's your Monday going?
Not bad. Yeah, woke up close to noon because I couldn't sleep last night, so it just started.
right. You're on the West Coast, obviously. Yeah, man. I don't know if that's a good place to start, but I mean, obviously, you got this new band, Sufferer, which is making some waves with just first of all, just great tunes.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, I know that it's more than just the tunes. You know what I mean? It isn't just like, oh, we're going to make this like badass band that's just like rocks. It's like, you're doing a lot more than that, but you're doing that too.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. trying to hit one or both of the goals was nice and hoping that we were able to get both captured was because primarily when Shane from Hail the Sun hit me up to do the project, I was on board before hearing any music because he just told me how he just seemed so passionate about getting the word out on anxiety and depression, especially in the music community, and doing it in a way that wasn't. I mean, obviously, it's like it's well-tread territory with a lot of bands, but doing it in a way that directly impacted people who undergo these problems and the second that we had decided like, okay, we're going to donate a portion to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, I was like, okay, cool. I don't care. Yeah, I mean, it could have been folk music and I was on board.
Well, that probably would have been great too. But so why did Shane from Hail the Sun, who I know as well, why did he reach out to you? Had you guys had previous conversations about anxiety, depression, things of that nature? Or was it like, this guy can scream like a motherfucker, you know?
I think it was a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. We did initially talk to, I mean, we've been friends through music for a long time, and we've had some discussions about shared experiences with anxiety. But I know that when Shane had reached out to me initially, a big thing was that he wanted me to tackle the lyric portion of it because it was super important to him to get everything right. And we had a mutual respect for each other as musicians and kind of both decided like, okay, this is the best way to tackle it. And so even when searching out, because it was important to him also to be a voice on the album, but he was pretty adamant that I'd take care of the lyrical side of things. So
yeah, that actually surprises me. It seems like from the way that, you know, your press releases are written, you know, I mean, it's a new band, so there isn't a ton of information out there, you know, and that's why we're talking. I mean, to make more information out there, but. You know, it seems like it's more of a collaborative effort between, you know, you, Shane, and then the other guys. Do you guys talk about, okay, we're going to write the song and this is sort of like what I'm feeling, like you, Corey, are feeling or what Shane's going through, and then you start there lyrically? Or how does that work in terms of like the group and writing, you know, music and lyrics and a concept? It's almost like a concept band in a way. How does that all tie together?
Yeah, it was, this one was really weird. The album was strange for me because, I'm kind of used to just receiving a song and then, kind of garnering like what emotion I feel out of the music and writing separately. And this was much more hands-on. Shane came to the table immediately and was like, hey, I want it to be three separate voices. I want there to be anxiety, depression, and the sufferer themselves. Right. And he was like, are you down to write each of these voices? And I was super nervous. A, I had said I would never write a concept album ever again because I had already done one. And so I found myself doing another one. And also it was really hard to write not only three separate perspectives, but to write four, three different vocal styles. I obviously can write for myself, but writing for Shane, I was like, I don't know what his voice caters to. I don't know what Forrest's best at. And so trying to kind of analyze their strengths and weaknesses, it was a process. It was definitely more planned out than any of the albums I have worked on before.
Well, are you guys residing in the same general vicinity? You're not, right?
No, yeah. Shane was sending me all the music. He would drive from the Bay Area to LA to write it with Blake, the drummer. Mm-hmm. And then he would send me these tracks. Forrest is in Montana.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, we were kind of doing everything individually and just kind of sending a lot of emails back and forth. For me, since I didn't have any demoing program, any way to record, I kind of just wrote everything by myself and couldn't send anything back, and just kind of told them, trust me, when we get to the studio, I have stuff, I promise.
Right. But that's tough. A new band that lives in the same city that's able to, like, you know, if you want to call it jamming or practicing or writing or like getting together, you know, a band writing an album might get together four or five times a week, you know? So, and for a new band, that's a challenge, but you guys have like such even more of a challenge. I mean, I guess it goes with the amount of experience you all have with other projects. But isn't it difficult to like say, okay, we got three vocalists, but you don't know the strengths and you can't really help each other out because everyone's in their own kind of bubble. Like, you know what I mean? You can't really be like, oh, well, why don't you try screaming it like this, you know?
Or could you?
I don't know. That's like, it seems so tricky to do it, you know, using the you know, just using email.
Yeah, we definitely had to do a lot of tweaking in the studio because, for instance, for Forrest probably was the most kind of blindsided by all the material because he was so far away and I couldn't send him anything. I could send him lyrics, but you don't really get a feel for how the lyrics get applied to the song. And so he flies out from Montana and the entire recording process was me just going, okay, and then now you're going to do this line and telling him the line, you know, seconds before he had to walk in and record it. And so, and I have a lot of tendency to do things in my style, and there were a lot of moments in the studio where I'm trying to get Forrest to do this thing that is not his kind of thing, and so we had to kind of tweak and figure it out. I was like, okay, like how would you do this part?
Because I'm
limited by how I would do it.
Wow. Well, the stuff that came out of this is really great. So you guys, I mean, it's impressive you found a way, you know, to make something with so much meaning and also just like I said, it's just awesome. So congratulations on that, man. And you guys are working on another record right now?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you talk about
Blake and Shane are laying the foundation for that, and I think we're going to go about it the same way where they kind of take care of everything musically and then send it up to me, and then we'll probably just repeat that process and I'll write all the vocals and hopefully it'll all work once we get in the studio. We do have something we're going to do different vocally. I know Shane, I don't think we've said we want to reveal it yet, but we're going to, it was really cool to be able to do that three voice concept for the first album. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to lean too heavily on that for the second album, and so we've found a workaround that we're going to do.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it, and I wish I could talk about.
Well, yeah, that's okay. I mean, I think a lot of people, you guys are done your first album and you've laid that foundation, but now's the time. I think a lot of people are going to find out about the band and what you're doing. And I hope this podcast helps, again, just because it's awesome. So, you said even last night, you couldn't get to sleep, you had to sleep in. And I read in an interview that, you say you're always a little bit sad, and now you're in this band that's based on anxiety, depression. Like, going back in your life and your upbringing and everything, is that been a constant? For you?
It wasn't when I was very young. I think I lucked out when I was a teenager. I was like an angsty teenager, like most teenagers, but I didn't really deal with anxiety or depression really until I left home. I moved to San Francisco and was on my own entirely and struggling really hard to even just afford living there. And,
sure. Well, yeah. San Francisco. And,
exactly. And I think I've been somewhat open about this in a past Suffer interview, but, it's like kind of embarrassing, but I had a really negative, drug experience that kind of triggered a lot of anxiety for me. I was experimenting a lot at that time, and I had taken mushrooms and had an awful, awful experience. And coming out of that, I moved home for other reasons, but ended up moving home and started having to take antidepressants. I was having panic attacks maybe two or three a week.
Wow. And,
I couldn't do it. I'm thankful for it now because it's hard to say what path I would have gone down if I had had a positive experience and maybe just like kept trying different things and,
right.
and sticking with drugs to like form new experiences. But now I kind of don't do anything. And so I have
you got
anxiety.
Scared straight a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm not stoked that I'm anxious, but I'm thankful for the experience.
Jeez. Yeah. Well, I mean, you say you moved out on your own. You moved to San Francisco. What was your early life like? Like, where were you born? And how did you grow up? Like as a kid in school and all that.
I was born in Texas. And my family moved around a lot. We moved to Florida for a while and then moved to California. My grandmother had diabetes and she had a stroke and, the stroke completely paralyzed her on the left side of her body. Mm-hmm. And so when that happened, my family moved out to California and that was kind of, we now had a central area to stay at. And so we stayed here in California until my, grandmother passed. And then my parents moved out to Georgia after that happened. And, history kind of repeated itself. My mom had diabetes and, suffered a series of strokes and she passed 2 years ago. And so now I'm kind of here in California maintaining I think I'm one of two Lockwoods out here. And, so moved around a lot and just kind of, glad I ended up here out of chance and met the musicians I did and kind of pursued music out here. I don't think Florida, the part of Florida I was in has much activity. So,
well, yeah, I mean, you never know, but I definitely think California is obviously a hot spot, especially the scene of bands that, came out of Northern California. It's like, it's, it's crazy, you know. What a scene.
Yeah.
How did you get involved? I mean, you say you got involved with music and stuff. I know for you, a lot of it was about the lyrical side of it, the poetry side of it, more than, trying to be like a really great, clean singer or whatever. You know, it was more about what you were saying than how you were saying it. I don't know if that's accurate, but I'm putting words in your mouth. How did that all come about? Like, I know you say, Circle Takes a Square was a big influence on yourself, and how did that approach happen for you when at whatever age?
Yeah, I when I was 17, I mean, I tried my hands at drums and had a guitar and could like passably play a guitar, but I didn't have a whole lot of music interest outside of listening to it. I just didn't really see myself as somebody who was like proficient in an instrument and I sang for fun, but I was too shy to really show anybody. But I wrote constantly. I went to San Francisco to pursue creative writing and had no idea what I wanted to do with it. I had the idea that, like, maybe I'd be a journalist or something. And I lived in the dorms a couple rooms away from Ben, who ended up we ended up making music together forever. He was in a lot Like Birds and currently plays guitar for Suffer. And so we met when we were 17 years old, and I would just show him stuff that I was writing. And he was like, you should just try making these lyrics. They seem very lyrical. And I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And he goes, it's fine. He was like, we, at the time, we were listening to a lot of Circle Takes a Square, Fall of Troy, Page 99, just like,
oh, yeah. What a
Stacia,
band.
Orchid.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, you're speaking my language, dude. Yeah, I love that shit. Yeah. Like real screamo.
Exactly. Yeah. It's weird now talking about screamo, and it's like, no, that's not what screamo is. Like, that's, it's not.
Oh, man, I was rolling my eyes as hard as anybody when people were calling my band screamo. I was like, yeah, that's not, no. Oh, God, what have I done? Yeah. Anyway.
So basically, he was like, why don't you try something like this? And we took a laptop into my garage at home and recorded me trying to scream to Nirvana's Tourette's.
Oh yeah.
And so we did a Nirvana cover, and we both really liked the way it sounded, and just decided, okay, let's take some of these poems and things that I've been writing and try to fit them into verses and make music. And we did, made a little garage band, made a small name for ourselves in Sacramento, and everything was kind of a chain from there. A Lot Like Birds picked me up primarily due to lyrics that the guitarist had hit me up because he liked the lyrics in one of the songs that I'd written and asked if I wanted to be a part of a new project.
No, it's cool. And A Lot Like Birds, I'd say, known for great musicianship, being technical but experimental, but also just very... I don't know. It's everything's very calculated with that band. And you come in as a guy that's like pretty much a storyteller, how did you fit in with that? Like being kind of around like virtuoso musicians when you're like a guy that isn't really like technically, you're not like James LaBrie of Dream Theater, but you're playing with guys that kind of play like that, Was that a weird dynamic in the band? Like, it's like, oh, this guy just kind of screams.
Yeah, it was a little intimidating.
Right. No, that's a good word for it.
Yeah, it was extremely intimidating because for one thing, there's obviously like people like Joe and Michael who were just unbelievable. The amount of time that they put into their craft and just their like songwriting. I'd never seen anybody do anything more meticulously and obsessively than songwriting that they had done. And I loved what I did, but I came from a very different world. I was obsessed with just playing like little tiny punk rock shows. Like I had like a grudge to bear against better musicians. Like I was like, why be really good at it when you can just be really passionate? And so I kind of like had to conform a little bit when I joined a lot like Birds, and sort of it was the first time I really tried to better myself as a musician, and I realized that I had to step up because I didn't have some like crystalline like perfect voice to share on record. I had to kind of make up the slack with my lyrics, and so my whole goal throughout that band was just to keep pace by trying to one up my own lyrical game. So and I, especially when Kurt joined,
I was just gonna ask you that, but because you know he's a guy that's very technically good singer.
Oh yeah,
you know he's he's not an instrumentalist virtuoso, but he is a vocal virtuoso. You know, absolutely.
Yeah, and so that was I felt a lot of pressure when that happened to just kind of prove myself, and Kurt did. Kurt and I worked so well together. In he would help me with, even from the very beginning. There were singing parts that I would sing on Conversation Piece and No Place that Kurt kind of encouraged me and said like, hey, like you can do this, and so we helped each other out lyrically and melodically, and
Spoke. I had him on the podcast just a few weeks ago. I don't know if you knew that.
And
you know, he, I don't know if you listened to it or whatever, but he spoke highly of you, you know, and talked about the writing of No Place and kind of how you guys wrote, I forget the name of the song, but it was kind of like you had one perspective on it and he had another perspective on it, and it really did seem like you guys had this really cool connection when you were writing. And you know, then of course when he left it got a little dramatic.
Yeah that was, that whole situation was I never know how to describe it, but I guess it's easier now that a lot like Birds is over. I feel like I don't have to like pad my language at all and kind of like just make sure everyone's happy. But the truth of the matter is, like, Kurt and I worked really, really well together, and in an ideal situation we would have been continuing to make the music that we both loved. Mm-hmm. But every musician in that band had a different idea of what they wanted to do for the next record, and everybody got kind of put in a point where it was like, okay, only the strongest opinion is going to win here. And So when it came down to it, there was even a small discussion of, okay, do we just write another Conversation Piece or another No Place? And I don't know if this was the right decision to make, but I felt really strongly about it at the time. I kind of vetoed that and said, I don't want anybody in the band to write something that they don't 100% back. And that's what I told Kurt too, when he said, dude, I'm going to leave if this is the album. And I said, you should, if that's, if you don't love this, don't write it. And even a part of me wonders if that was kind of hypocritical, because then I ended up staying, even though the truth of the matter is I wanted to write another heavy record.
But interesting.
But I'm glad DaVizzy happened. It pushed me a lot, and I'm proud I have like that as kind of a milestone.
Well, it's a great record. I think like now it's a couple of years have passed. I think the record is really, it shines now, maybe in a way that your fans didn't understand when it first came out. I don't know if you agree with me.
Initially be hated by a lot, and then maybe hopefully after some gestation, people would grow to appreciate. And so, yeah, I've been happy with the response, especially years after being released.
I kind of have a question though about just the whole making this record, because you're working on this album, and a big part of it is that there's not going to be screaming on the record, right? Like you're going to take a different approach to that. Whereas you have Kurt in the band who, for lack of a better, you know, term, is the clean singer, and you're the unclean singer, you know? So when you're writing for that, like with Kurt, and that's the approach, like when he said, yo, I'm out, you were just like, okay, I'll just do the clean vocals? Or were you guys have been planning on both singing clean? Like how would that have worked?
I and I've never told anybody this. I kind of felt that this was going to happen with Birds for about a year prior to writing Divizzy. I just Michael had gone off to write his solo record. Mm-hmm. And I had watched him when I first met him. He was in a ska band, and
awesome.
And so some people's roots stick with them stronger than others. And for me, I would have been happy making the same music for, you know, 20 years. And for Mikey, he wanted to change. He was constantly changing. I'd never heard him listen to ska since joining A Lot Like Birds. I knew that he had completely left that behind,
right?
And I felt that he was leaving post-hardcore and hardcore music behind, and so I kind of anticipated Divizzy to be a much softer record, and I got terrified because there's that moment where I go, we have a clean singer, what need will there be for me? Like I could write lyrics for Kurt to sing, but there's no point in me singing like alongside of him. And so I ended up just taking some vocal lessons. I was like, okay.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Like if I have to sing in order to like keep my claim in this band, I'll sing. And when the songs got demoed out and Kurt said, okay, what's the idea here? Are both Corey and I supposed to sing? And the consensus was yes. And Kurt was like, I don't know if this works. And I was like, I don't know if it works either, but I'm just going to like, and so, yeah, when he left, I was like, oh shit, now I have to sing the entire record.
Right.
It was a weird opportunity and not one that I would have ever, asked for. But when it happened, I kind of said to myself, okay, this might be the only time where I have this record that I loved the music on it, and I was like, and instead of being the screamer on it, I have this opportunity to sing. It's not what I wanted to do forever, but yeah.
Well, Kurt said he's like man, I'll tell you the record sounded a lot better than the demos. He's like, the record's actually good, but the demos were not good. That's what he said. And
it's funny that he says that too, because Kurt and I were notorious for whining and complaining about any song that was not all over the place. And so I remember us receiving demos for the softer songs on No Place, like No Nurture and Corroy Ledge, mm-hmm. and everything. And us just going, this is boring. This is too slow. And like, we don't like this. And they sound too similar. And it ended up, once the record was done, those ended up becoming some of our favorite songs.
Yeah. So it is interesting though, how you can say, like, if you're writing for a certain band, and you try to do something like weird or different, once the singer has his vocals on it, it just makes it less weird, you know? Like, you're always like, oh, this is going to, like, freak everybody out. And then you're like, actually, no, that's just, that's the way Corey and Kurt sing. And that's, now it just sounds like a lot like Birds. You know, it's like crazy how the music is the foundation, but in some ways it doesn't matter as much.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny. So I've been listening a lot to the newest Polienso record, and that's an album that is just wildly different from having vocals on it and having just the instrumentation. And the album has both versions of the songs on it. It's got, I think, four songs with vocals and the exact same four songs without vocals.
Interesting.
And it's just such a cool... I almost feel awful for guitarists and drummers and everything, because they get first dibs at this creation process, and then they watch stuff layered on top of it. And even if it makes it better, it still changes it. And so they have to watch their baby kind of put on somebody else's clothes.
It's a good, wow. That's, yeah, that, what an expression. Yeah, that's, it's true. And it's, I mean, how many times does like some guitar player write like this really cool, like chorus lead, and then once you put vocals on it, it's like you don't even hear the lead anymore. You know, it's like not even there practically. So I could see, you know, and I mean, I am a guitar player too, but it's like, I mean, I guess it's different for me because I'm the one singing over my own guitar lead. But if I wasn't, it would be like, oh man, like I really like that guitar lead, and now it's like the song's completely different. You know, that happens too.
And I've always thought there's almost like a marked difference when you can tell that the singer wrote the guitar for it, and I think it's that ability to kind of know exactly what you're going for with both parts. And I don't know. I know you're doing the interview, but if you don't mind me asking, like, how is that? Like, how conscious of are you when you're writing guitar? That, for instance, like you're not going to step over your leads and stuff like that. And kind of knowing, I feel like you have a better handle of when to let a part breathe. And
right. I think it depends. I think there's sometimes when I write music for a song, sometimes I really know what the vocals are going to do. Like I really know, I mean, maybe I don't know the exact melody, but I'll know like kind of where it's going to be spaced. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like you say, let it breathe. But then there's other times when I'm like, I don't know, man, I'm just going to figure it out later. Like this is a cool progression. This is a cool lead. This is like, you know, where they'll be like some kind of interesting drum fill or like tempo, you know, fluctuation or something. And then I'm like, I don't know, I'm just going to figure out the vocals later. That happens all the time too. I'd say 50-50, it's like that. So, you know, I mean, maybe that's just part of that's just laziness, but I really, you know, I definitely step over my own myself. I think that that's just natural to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, with Kurt, and, you know, he made that kind of statement when he left the band, and, you know, you made a very long retort. But, you know, it's really respectful because you weren't scathing, you weren't mean to him. You kind of said, like, dude, I wish you the best, and you really seemed like you meant it. How is your relationship now with you guys? I mean, I assume it must be still pretty chill.
Yeah. It was unfortunate when everything went down, because that was probably the only, I don't even know how long it was. There was maybe like a 6-month period where we just didn't really talk to each other as much. We still texted here and there, but we didn't see each other. And then a while after that, I think it was after Divizi came out, we just grabbed a couple beers and caught up, and it doesn't feel like much has changed. It felt like we both just started going to different schools, because there's no hard feelings. There weren't really any hard feelings during the process either, because Kurt and I kind of, there was a group discussion about what was going on, and then Kurt and I had our side conversations where I kind of told him, I was like, hey, I think this stone is in motion, and I don't think there's any For instance, I listened to the podcast, and I know Kurt had talked about trying to find a compromise. And I didn't think that there was a compromise, and so I told him, it was like, if you feel you have to leave, I fully support you. I don't know. It sucks. I wish Birds had continued with Kurt, but it didn't, and he and I are fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that led to the demise. I mean, was it too much at once? Like Kurt leaving, the change of sound. Did it almost not matter how good the record was, just because there was so much external things? Like, is that what led to kind of the demise?
Yeah, I know. I've seen a lot of people say, "Oh, Divizzy didn't do well, and that's why Birds stopped." But Divizzy sold better than No Place in Conversation Piece, and it was a successful record on paper. But I think the record changed the way we all kind of looked at the band. And for me, when the conversation came to, okay, what's the next record going to be? I sort of said, I actually proposed that they continued the band without me.
Wow.
Because we had another part of having Kurt leave is that I tried to sing as much as I could, but I felt out of my element, and we had our bassist Matt Cote, who's an incredible singer, and he sang on parts of the record as well. And so the way that I kind of wanted Birds to continue post Divizzy is, I said, have Matt sing, have him completely take on like the primary vocal role, and I'll go do something else, because I just didn't feel like it was my band anymore. I was proud of Divizzy, but I didn't want to do Divizzy again.
You were a band. You weren't a band for one record or two records, even. You know, you had a catalog of all this stuff. Like when you went on tour to play the Divizzy stuff, I assume you were playing stuff from your entire catalog.
Yeah, we actually, what we did is we played Divizzy in its entirety, and then we encored a couple older songs. And it's funny, even then, playing those encores felt like I went through an entire set of Divizzy, and I felt out of my element and uncomfortable. And then we'd play those old songs, and I was like, oh shit, okay, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that was, at least for me, a big indicator of right, what needed to happen with Birds.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're looking back, though, I mean, I'm on your Spotify right now, and top 10 songs, 7 of them are from Divizzy.
Oh, wow.
So I think there's something resonating with some people out there. I do think that. So regardless, you know, the chapter is closed, I guess, and maybe to be reopened one day, maybe not.
I don't know. I know Kurt and I are down. Kurt and I have talked about doing at least like a like not reunion necessarily, but just like one last hurrah tour or something like that. I don't even know if I'm supposed to say this, but Kurt and I did track something for a different project recently. So he and I still love working together, and I don't know if it'll manifest itself as Birds, but maybe he and I'll do something down the road.
Okay, well, that's great, man. Well, I want to talk about your book. That's super cool and interesting. It's called Of Star and Sand and Envy, a book. Talk to me about how this kind of came about. I know you did an Indiegogo campaign to raise some money for it, but you know, in terms of that being a thing people do, it's usually like, okay, this kind of one project ends, well, start another project, not write a book.
Yeah. And I think that comes with, if I could go back in time and teach myself an instrument at an earlier earlier age, I would have done so, because the hardest thing for me as primarily a lyricist is that I have to have music to work with. Yeah. And so right after Birds breaking up, I I immediately had, I didn't stop writing. I kept writing, and I just didn't have the music anymore. And if I had, you know, been able to write music for myself, I would have done it, done a solo record, done something like that. But it, that wasn't the case. So I just, I was growing super restless and had been told in the past by other musicians, like, why don't you write a book? And at the time I was like, no, I'm too busy touring, et cetera. And so now felt like the prime moment. I was like, oh, okay, now I have time on my hands. And I can't stop writing, so I need to funnel it into something. And yeah,
Is the book come out yet?
No, I'm still in the writing process. Okay. I sort of used the idea of funding the book to really kick myself into doing it. Because that way I felt like, okay, now I'm beholden unto other people. I need to put this out instead of having it be something like, oh yeah, one day I'll write a book.
Yeah, that's true.
So now I think that it's been about 4 months into the writing process, and it's coming along, and it's been absolutely nuts. I don't know what I thought it was going to be like. I thought like a decade of lyric writing would have prepared me for writing this, but I've had breakdowns where I just said, okay, I don't know why I put myself into this situation. I don't know if I can do it. And then I've had epiphanies and just kind of gone, okay, this is fine. This is good. And it's been, I guess it's been similar to any record process, but
it's all you, all the weight is on your shoulders, right?
Right.
That's a big difference. And even with, you know, I have a little solo project that I do, and it's amazing. Like, I have to schedule time with myself to be creative. Like I you know, the same way I would do it, like a band practice with other people. You almost have to do that. Otherwise it's like, oh yeah, I'll just do it. And then you just don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I there was an initial, right after the Indiegogo was funded, there was probably a period of about 3 weeks where I would open this program that I'm writing in and look at it and then make myself angry because I didn't want to write anything, because what if it was bad? And then I would close it. And I did that for 3 weeks of just,
wow,
I don't know. But
well, there's some things coming. I mean, you're working on it now. And I guess you're far along in the process. You can probably talk a little bit about what people can expect from it, because it's a little bit foggy. I mean, it has a title, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
So what exactly can people expect from it? Cause I know it's a collection of some short stories, like some poems and some other things. Is that right?
Yeah. I basically wanted to take all the kind of free form writing that I do with lyrics. Because in other bands, a lot of the time when I was given a song, I actually had stuff I've already written in the past that was just kind of formless. And if I felt like it fit for the song, then I would make it work. And so now I have all this formless material that I was like, okay, I'll just, I guess for lack of a better word, make them into poems. And I don't know if they're, I didn't study poetry. I'm not like some, like, I don't know, well-versed English major. Prose isn't like my end-all be-all, but I kind of just was like, okay, I'm going to do something. I don't know if they need titles, but they're going to be an outlet. And so I have just these, these just lyrical blocks of content. And then I also decided, okay, it can't just be that. I need to put some more structured stuff. And so I decided to challenge myself with some short stories, and that has been the most, I almost haven't written any of the lyrical stuff in maybe a month. This last month I've just been diving into the short stories, because it's just, super new territory.
Different beast, excited. For sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, it's been very successful. The Indiegogo campaign. I mean, I don't know. Is it still ongoing? Can people still help you out on there?
Yeah.
I don't really know how these things work. That, like, they're all different. And
I've almost had an aversion to even looking at it for the past couple months, because I just was blown away by the initial response.
Yeah.
Because it funded in a couple hours after I put it up.
Totally. I saw that. It's I think it's over double now, like what, you know, what you were trying to get.
Yeah. So. And I left an option. They had a clickable option that just said, we'll leave it open if people want to keep donating. But if you don't receive a certain amount of donations for a month, then we'll close it.
Okay.
But once a month, I get an update where it'll tell me that people are still donating. And so I genuinely haven't looked at it. I'm assuming it's still open. I think people can still donate because, yeah. But
does that put more pressure on you? Knowing that it's there's so many people that are really excited about this, and you know, I mean, they're going to read every word, you know, I mean, yeah. Or maybe you need that.
And I do. I think I need that pressure, in order to just make sure it wasn't something that I could just give up on entirely.
Yeah.
And so now, even when I write something, if I write for 2 hours and in the morning I hate it and have to delete it, I can't delete it and just go, okay, I'm done trying. I have right. to go, okay, I try again tonight. And so there's pressure, but I think it's mostly just with time. I don't want to wait forever to have it come out, but the process has been slower than I anticipated. And so a lot of the sleeplessness recently has right. just been, if I have an unproductive writing night, I won't sleep that night. And I just kind of stay up and I'll get out of bed 4 or 5 times in the night and sit back down at the computer and try to write. And if it's not coming, it's not coming, and I can't force it. But you do feel that time pressure. So,
wow, dude. Well, all the best with that. And I mean, congratulations. I mean, when all said and done, I think you're going to be able to feel really good about that and going through that process. I think you'll be better for it. Well, anything else to add? I'm going to play a Sufferer track for sure. I really need people to hear that project. But before I do that, anything else to add? Tell the people.
There's some Sufferer news as far as some stuff we're working on. Obviously, we're working on another album. There's a tour being worked out. I don't know what the dates are going to be yet, but we are going to do one summer tour. And cool. There's so Dolby Radio approached us with they wanted us to discuss anxiety and depression on their platform, and so we're going to be doing a kind of I don't know what the regularity is, but like an episodic podcast, and just having like maybe once a month or once every 2 months, we're going to do just a discussion about anxiety and depression, and have people on, have some experts that we've gotten to meet through Sufferer, and
cool. That's
also maybe
great.
Have some musicians. So, yeah.
That's great. Well, considering this is a podcast, I bet a lot of people listening to this are going to want to check that out. So,
yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Awesome.
Cool, man. Well, dude, thank you so much. I guess I'll let you go, but enjoy the rest of your day, and I hope you can get some writing done so you can sleep.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Of course, Corey. Thanks so much. So there it is with Corey. Dude, thank you, man, for doing this episode. I loved the conversation. I loved the honesty. And I got to say, since having Kurt on a few weeks ago, and now Corey, I've really been jumping in with both feet into this a lot like Bird stuff. And obviously I knew the band when they were together a little bit, and I knew some of their tunes, but now listening to them, I mean, I've become very, very immersed in this music. And Sufferer is an incredible band. Wow. And I love the whole idea of the band, the platform, and what they're doing to raise awareness for depression and anxiety. So make sure you check out Sufferer, and I know you will after I play this tune because it's a banger. But hey, anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. You don't want to miss all the great episodes that I have coming up in the coming weeks. And enjoy baseball season, April, all this good stuff happening. If you don't care about sports, well, it's going to be beautiful weather in just a couple weeks. So
Everything is awesome. Thank you again. Here is the tune I will leave you with. It is called Then by Sufferer on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next time. If I can fall back to sleep,